inciting violence every day. We don't want this occupation. We want a more peaceful nation. We don't want this occupation. We want a more peaceful nation.
We don't want this occupation. We want a more peaceful nation.
We don't want this occupation. We want a more peaceful nation.
Friday at 7 o'clock.
Do
you know the building?
No.
So now there's going to be kind of a duet, although there's more than two people here. The Halifax Raging Grannies and the Halifax Radical Cheerleaders. I've never seen this before in my life.
What is it good for?
Thanks a lot, folks.
Another round of applause for the Holly Rad's Grannies duo. Just going to turn things over for a quick second to Ruth Gambert from the Ecology Action Center. It's important, obviously, in talking about things we do want when we're having an action like this, and obviously we want priorities of our government to be climate change. So I'll just turn things over to Ruth for 1 second.
Hi. The Ecology Action Center has just launched a campaign to wake up the politicians. The idea is that if the global temperature goes 2 degrees or more above centigrade, we're in very, very serious trouble, and it's well on its way to that now. So what we're doing is between now and early December, when the meetings are going to be held in Bali following up on the Kyoto meetings, we're going to ask people to call their politicians. I have a sheet here with their numbers. Politicians at all levels, municipal, provincial, and federal. Yeah. It's too bad that Alexa's not here, because her name's on here too. And we're calling her, not so much because she needs to be convinced, because she's quite good on this topic, but because she needs ammunition. When she stands up in front of Parliament, she has to be able to say, I got 97 calls last week, let's deal with this. So that's the campaign, and anybody who would like a sheet with these phone numbers, I have them. Thanks.
Thanks, Ruth. So next up, to sort of continue on this similar vein, we have Larry Hughes, who is an energy policy researcher with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, Nova Scotia office, and also a professor within Dalhousie's Electrical and Computing Engineering Department. Mr. Hughes' specialty research has been upon energy alternatives in Nova Scotia. So please welcome Larry Hughes.
Okay, thank you, Stu. I was asked to talk about energy to you and Afghanistan and the war in 1 to 3 minutes. Well, it's going to be a bit of a stretch to do it in 1 to 3 minutes, but what I will talk about is two of the issues that we should be worried about, climate change, clearly, and also energy security, that is where our energy comes from. One of the solutions to this that has been proposed is to use ethanol. Now, most of you realize that ethanol that we're using now is corn-based ethanol, and this is raising the whole debate about food or fuel. What do we do? Do we allow people to eat, or do we turn the fuel into our automobile, or use it for automobiles so people can sit in traffic and idle? Now, you may be saying to yourself, what does this have to do with the war? And the answer is, surprisingly, quite simple. The United States is, as we know, the world's largest consumer of oil. Do you know which sector of the U.S. economy or country is the largest consumer of oil within the United States? And the answer is the U.S. military. Now, a few weeks ago, the U.S. military, well, perhaps I should say for that, the U.S. military, like everyone else in the world, is going to be facing liquid fuel shortages in the very near future because of peak oil and various other reasons why we're having that problem. The solution that's been suggested, of course, is to replace with fuel with ethanol. Well, what the U.S. military has done in the past few weeks is tested jet aircraft with biofuels like ethanol. So as a result, it's not only a case now of food or fuel, it's a case of food being used for fighting, which is as mad as it comes. Thank you very much.
Night before last, sorry about this, I meant to mention it before. Night before last, I saw The Nature of Things, the Suzuki. And at the end of the program, he announced that by the year 2010, if things don't improve significantly very, very soon, the Alberta tar sand, oil sands will be the worst emitter of greenhouse gases on the planet. So we have a lot to do. Right now, Nova Scotia Power is fifth worst in the country as far as emission of greenhouse gases. So we've got a lot of work.
All right, so I'm getting a lot of nods. So on the vein of the tar sands, there is an independent media project called The Dominion that will be coming out with a special issue on the tar sands of Canada, so watch out for that. So lastly, we have one final speaker who will talk about more concretely about Iran, and his name is Adam Cannon. Where are you, Adam? Right here, okay.
Hello. Many people here are worried about a possible attack on Iran. And yeah, thank you. That's part of the reason why many of us have come out to march today, to do our part to prevent an attack on Iran. And I'd just like to take a moment to talk about some of the reasons that those people in Washington will use to justify an attack. They will claim that Iran is interfering in the internal affairs of Iraq and Afghanistan, as if those countries are otherwise free of outside interference. They will also try to justify military action with a combination of reasons that we are all too familiar with from the Iraq War, namely nuclear weapons, terror, and of course, their concern for freedom and democracy in Iran. Well, actually, Iran had a democracy and a democratic tradition. Right. It was overthrown by a joint British-American coup in 1953. And the issue that led to that coup was that the elected government of Iran, I think it's important to mention it was an elected government, because they always want to talk about democracy, the elected government wanted to take back control of the energy resources of Iran from the foreign companies, mostly British companies, and wanted to use the energy wealth to benefit internal development and the majority of Iranians. Well, you know, that's unacceptable to the Americans and the British. That's not how it's supposed to work. If a government pays attention to the needs of its own people, it's not going to be paying enough attention to the overriding needs of foreign investors. So that government's got to go. And that's what happened. As I said, in 1953, a joint British-American coup overthrew the elected government, demolished the democracy, and restored to power the Shah of Iran, who was a brutal tyrant. He ushered in 25 years of terror, torture, and violence that was, of course, backed by the U.S. And this violence became so severe that it provoked resistance from the Iranians, and that led to the revolution in 1979 and the overthrow of the Shah. So what did the Americans then do? They turned immediately to punish the Iranians for defying them, for overthrowing their client ruler. And how did they do this? They turned to supporting Saddam Hussein when he invaded Iran, killing hundreds of thousands of people. They provided crucial diplomatic, military and economic support. And I think it's important to remember that back then there was no nuclear issue. There was no concern about Iran building nuclear weapons. But they still had the same, they were still doing the same thing. They were punishing Iran because they want to send a message to other countries that if you defy the US, you're going to pay a very heavy price. And you're going to be punished harshly. And after the Iraq invasion, after that ended, they turned to trying to wage economic warfare against Iran, trying to hurt the Iranian economy through sanctions. And lately, they have tightened the sanctions by using this nuclear issue to justify tighter UN sanctions, torturing the Iranian people even more, trying to strangle them economically. And now, after all this, they're talking about a direct attack on Iran, an outright aggression. And, I mean, you have to ask, like, what are they thinking? What do they hope to gain from it? A lot of people say, it's not going to happen. What could they gain from it? And other people, commentators, say, well, they can weaken Iranian power in the region, or they can get other countries, for instance, Canada, through war, through threat of war, to join in on efforts to strangle Iran economically. But I think there's a more general reason, too. Just that, you know, they kind of want to make a big show of force. They want to intimidate everyone and show that even though they're bogged down in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, they can and will continue to use violence to get their way, especially in an area of primary concern to them, like the Middle East, which is home to most of the world's energy. And I think it's their way of telling the world, you know, this threat of war, going to war, look, the Middle East is our turf. We'll do what we like here. No one can stop us. And either you go along with us, or your fate is going to be the same as Iran's. And I mean, what can we do about that? We've come out here to march, to oppose what is happening in Iraq, Afghanistan, what is happening in Iran, and what may happen in Iran. And I think that's great, but we shouldn't lose picture. We shouldn't lose sight of the bigger picture. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that there is a long-running American imperial project of which what is happening in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Iran are one phase with more to follow. And we shouldn't think that when Bush and Cheney leave power, this imperial project is somehow going to come to an end. Because empire is in the interests of those who own and run the United States. And like slavery, this imperialism isn't going to go away overnight. It's not going to go away quietly. It's going to require, you know, institutions, popular institutions, and a long, hard struggle. And when I look at the world, it looks very grim and the future very bleak. But an event like today, you know, shows me and everyone that there are great opportunities to resist empire and to fight for peace and justice. And I think that's worth fighting for each and every day. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Adam. So just before we wrap things up, I've been asked to make a couple of quick announcements of upcoming events. First is the Voice of Women for Peace is hosting a talk entitled, Is the Government Really Loyal to Our Troops? One Wife's Perspective, the Sue Riordan Story. It takes place at 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 30th, this coming Tuesday, room 303 of the Dow Student Union Building. Also, there is a film being shown at Dalhousie called Salud, about Cuba, about the healthcare sector in Cuba, as well as I think their export of doctors to other countries. Be accompanied by two Cuban folks who will be traveling through Canada. That's taking place 7 p.m. November 2nd, Friday, at the Dow Law School. What room number?
I can't remember, but look for the posters.
Look for the posters. So, I'm going to wind things up here. Thanks, everyone, for coming out. Just remember, it doesn't end here. There's a lot of things we can do to stop the war in Afghanistan and stop an impending war in Iran. We have an election coming up. We have a visit from Malalai Joya coming up. And we have lots of things I think we can do within our universities and schools around military recruitment. So, thanks, everyone, for coming out. And it doesn't end here. So
placards
go over there. If everyone can sort of put your placards over there, we can gather them up. Thanks.